Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, we had quite a week. Nobody would believe all the wonderful things that happened. The good news is that Whirlpool, not that they're laying off people, because I know they're going to lay off the black people, but they're laying off people, and they tried to run the city of Benton Harbor, and they can't even run their own company, and they making sure that the residents of Benton Harbor don't get a good education. This is Whirlpool Corporation. See, some black people just, they don't get it, they don't understand. They're so busy trying to kiss up to white folks, and at the same time, white folks is destroying black folks, you see. And they're doing it purposely. They're doing it in a way that, you know, the average person with the average intelligence is going to start laying off hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. There's a possibility that they could go under. All because God is chastising them. God is chastising them, and he's going to chastise his sandals also. Don't think for a moment these sandals don't get away with this. It's not going to happen. They're going to start chastising the sandals along with them. See, I also want to say this. I want to thank Benton Harbor Sambo for bringing home the goods. I was so thankful for this opportunity, you know, to receive the money and to receive, all across the country, people are acknowledging Benton Harbor and Benton Harbor Sambo. Like, I warned these guys. I told them, you're not going to beat my Sambos. The Queen Bee, I don't mean B-E-E. The Queen Bee, yes. I mean, without her, we could not have won this thing. We could not have won if it wasn't for the Queen Bee. Then we have the mayor of all Sambos running around here, wanting to be somebody so bad. But even being the mayor of Benton Harbor, that ain't nothing. I mean, you pitiful. You pitiful. We put you in there. It's embarrassing, you know. But I tell you, you know, you learn from your mistakes. We put that Sambo in there, and then what he do? He switched horses right in the middle of the race. Yeah. And that's how he became the mayor of all Sambos across the Marcus Muhammad. Marcus Muhammad is the mayor of all Sambos all across the country. He's the mayor of all Sambos. And the Queen Bee, she's the queen of all Sambos. Then we have Dwayne Cease, the scumbag of all Sambos. But it wasn't for them. I mean, I'm so proud to bring home the hardware, because it's important. People need to understand how important this thing is. It's very, 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 very important to show these people. And it's over now. We won't start. You can start voting for your Sambo just to get them nominated. We're going to start that in July. So that's, if you have a favorite Sambo that you want to put in, all they got to have five votes. Five people got to say that these guys are their choice for the Sambo, and then we'll put them in the running and have a runoff. So that is tremendous. 31,000, over 31,000 people voted. And I did have a conference with my friend from Houston. He was disappointed in the people, but like I told him, you're always going to be disappointed in the people. You know, if you want, that's in my people, you know. if you want something done, you got to push it and let the chips fall where it may. And I say this to say that, you know, even if we would have lost, I think the message was loud and clear that we want to bring the Sambos. We want to make sure that they don't rest at night and people know who they are all across the nation. And, like, my friend from Houston, they were shocked that a member of the Nation of Islam would be classified as a Sambo. I said, he's not classified as Sambo. He's the epitome of all Sambos. What he do is natural. You know, when you talk about Martin Muhammad, you got to talk about the Nation of Islam, who know he's doing this and have not said a mumbling word. Have not said a word. They was reading the white man newspaper. See, the white man, anytime you see the white man trying to build a black man up, you know that ain't happening. He's no good. White folks, not all, hate black people. They hate black people for a reason. Because all the hell that we have survived. All the hell that we have been through, we have survived. All the hell that we've been through, we have survived. And that's what they're angry about. They're doing every move they make is against black people. Every move. And how they can suck more dollars out of the system. And here's another. Anytime you see that money been allocated to certain communities, it goes through about 10 white hands before it gets to a black hand. And each one of them hands have taken a part of that. You know, and that's shameful. You know, and here's the sad part. Have you ever heard of racist money? Have you ever heard of racist money? I was told that money has no color, but that's not the truth. That's not the truth. Have you ever heard a Chinese spending money in a black area? Have you ever seen a Chinese shopping? Any reason? Have you? You never will. A Chinese would never, ever, ever spend money in a black area because they know. Black people don't know. You know, because they don't think. They got them all high on that old wacky weed now, them gummies and stuff. They don't even know which way is up. I was talking to a guy the other day. He's mumbling and grumbling and that. I said, bad man, I'm gone, man. I ain't got time to be talking. No, I'm gone. But it's a thing. You see, a Chinese would never, ever, ever spend money in a black community. No. You'll go and buy hair products from these people. You'll spend all your money and they'll talk to you bad. You accept it. Well, if a black man said the same thing this white person said, you'd be ready to kill the black person. You see, let me go on. Let me talk about a Japanese. You know, you would never see a Japanese spending money in a black community. It's not going to happen. I call that racist dollars. Their dollars are racist. They don't want to come into a black community. They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. They're not going to come in. Even if they have a flat tire, they're going to call someone from their community to come and help them do the flat, and he's going to be Japanese. I don't know much about the Japanese and Chinese relationship when it comes to spending money, but I know neither one of them will spend money in a black community. Never. You'll never see it. You'll never see a person lining up behind you that's Chinese if you're in a black store. It won't happen. No matter what. I call that racist dollars. The Japanese got racist dollars. Let's go to those Arabs. Those, man, guys, those are the epitome of you not spending money with them. I would never, ever spend money with a Chinese, a Japanese, an Arab. I won't do it. The Arab would never, ever spend money in a black man's store. I haven't seen it. That don't mean it's never been done, but I have never seen it. I have never seen an Arab buying anything in the black community. They would travel 10, 15, 20 miles to one of their own to keep from spending money in the black community. And we spend all our money with these Arabs. We spend a lot of money with the Chinese, the Japanese, but we spend a lot of money with the Arabs. Spend a lot of money with them. And they don't give a crap about us. They talk to the kids bad. They talk to the people. Now, they talk to people bad, and people, black folks, don't do nothing. Matter of fact, they even had the nerve to one day go whoop this boy, whoop this cane. And not one single person in this community stood up and said something. Oh, they tough when it comes to you, though. They would have shot and killed. They would have shot up your house. That's how they operate. They would have shot up your house. That's what I'm talking about. See, and that's the difference between me and most people, you see. I go out and help everybody. I love my brothers and sisters. But the problem is my brothers and sisters don't love themselves. That's the problem. That's the problem that we have today. My brothers and sisters have refused to fall in love with themselves. It's not going to happen. And that's probably the difference between me and most people. You see, I'm going to say whatever I want to say. I'm going to do whatever I want to do. The only thing I ask of you don't bother me, and I won't bother you. If you see me, don't even say hi to me. If you're a Sambo, I don't want that spirit nowhere around me. That's why we have racist dollars today, because we got these people in charge are simply Sambos, and they know it. They're Sambos because they can't have, they want to be something so bad. The only thing they want to get approval of is the white man saying that they okay, and he's rubbing them on the back of their head. So I don't want you to bother me, and I promise I won't bother you. As long as you stay out of my way. And that goes for you, you, and you. Because if you do, I'm going to put some heat on you that you never had before. You know, it's not a threat. It's just a warning. Because I don't want no Sambos around me. I don't want that spirit around me. I don't want people who claim to, who want to be something around. I don't. See, black people's not going to, it's not people in Benton Harbor going to, but people around the country. It self-dismisses. You see, I'm not saying that the people in Benton Harbor are not smart enough, but I will say that the message itself has a ring to it around the country. And it goes by those 931,000 people who voted for self. And a lot of people didn't vote. A lot of my friends didn't vote. That's on them. That's on them. I'm not going to lose no sleep over it because you didn't vote. I'm not going to do that. But it just shows where our way of thinking. We had an opportunity, and we took advantage of it. I had a plan, and I execute that plan. Because I tell you, Sambos are all over. You know, Khalid Muhammad said, black people has been robbed of themselves. He said, when white folks can't defeat you, they will always find a black person, some bootlicker, some butt kissing, some buck for a few dollars. And they could pat him on the back of the head. That's Khalid Muhammad, the Nation of Islam guy. very powerful young man. But he was a no-nonsense guy. A no-nonsense guy, you see. But he said, black people have been robbed of themselves. When white folks can't defeat you, they will always find a black person, a bootleg, a buck kisser, a bunk ass, to bring out. They'll do it. That's what they do. You know, it's mystery. And I said, it's no mystery. See? And then we want to know why there's racist dollars. You see? But we'll spend our money. See, black folks don't have racist dollars. They don't care who they spend money with. They can cheat them, beat them. They can do all that. And they still going to spend their money with these people. There's not a reason in the world we should be spending our money with the Arab. See, the Arab was in the slave trade. Yeah, they were. Still in it today. Say, yes, they are. You know? And then, look, as a people, think about this for a second. As a people that had been traumatized for 450 years and tortured to this day, tortured, abused, mistreated, hung by the neck until death. Everybody in the household raped by this white devil. Everybody. Nobody in this household was not raped. Whenever they felt like it, you got the nerve to want to be like them. You don't have no shame. You're going to have a place in hell. Hell gonna be your home. Trying to be like these evil, wicked people. These people are no good. They never been no good. And all of a sudden you wanna be like them. And hurt people, the community, hurt anything. These elected, and you idiots go out and vote for these people. And you know what they're doing is wrong. And you say nothing. You don't say a mumbling word. I'm sickened by that. Look at that educational system we have. It's a joke. But we allow it. How are you going to blame somebody else for what you allow? You don't know. They had no heat at the high school. No heat. And they still don't have no heat. And not one single parent, not one, and stood up and say, you're going to get some heat for my child. Not one single parent. And you say you love your child. Then when they're out here shooting up and doing and getting shot and things, oh, he was such a good child. He may have been a good child, but you wasn't a good parent. You allow this to happen to your children, then you cry like a baby. America, you are killing black folks. You're killing black people. You're killing them in the classroom. Look at the books. Look at the condition of the school. They bring in the lowest grade of food for our children. The lowest grade of food for our children. That's right. The lowest grade. Because something is better than nothing. The hospital. More black baby deaths. Here, I can only talk about Benton Hospital, a Caldwell Hospital, than any other hospital probably in the nation. Even the mother died, not just the baby. Even the mother died from this, from delivering a baby. And remember, during slavery, very few babies died during giving birth. Remember that. If you look down through history, very few babies died. And we got all this technology today, and black babies are dropping like flies. You go to the hospital for a cold and die. What kind of mess is that? You can stay home and treat a cold. It's sad. It's sad, but we have allowed. But we got to stay up on what we're doing. And let me say this. A lie don't become the truth. Wrong don't become right. Even if you are white, a lie do not become the truth. And wrong do not become right. Evil do not become good just because it's your friend, just because it's a member of your family. Truth do not need any help. It could stand alone. The truth don't need no help. And a lie must lie down and go to sleep. And just remember, a lie don't become the truth. I don't care who's saying it. If it's a lie, it's a lie. And it got to go somewhere and lie down. Wrong don't become right just because you're white. Evil don't become good just because it's your friend, just because it's a member of your family. It doesn't become right because you like the person. The truth don't need any help. Just remember that. The truth can stand up against anything. And remember this. Racism is a system, a socially acceptable norm that violates the God-given right of selected members of society. Racism is brutality. Racism is violent against humanity. Racism is born from a perverted and subverted form of evil within the corrupt DNA of human beings. You see, they think that they're doing right by doing what they do to black people. But the bad part, black people accept it. You see, I have warned black people for years, you better start saving your bullets. Because they're not going to sell you bullets. If all hell break loose, you're not going to be able to buy no bullets. You out here shooting bullets, shooting up everything that you touch. You can't do it. No matter what you say, you can't do it. You see? And I know black people can run fast. They're the fastest people in the world. Wisdom, knowledge, and understanding has been chasing black folks, has been chasing my brothers and sisters. But my brothers and sisters, they have always ran too fast for wisdom, knowledge, and understanding to overtake them. We're living in a world, right? This is a world. This is a world that got to stand up and fight and continue to fight. You see, God has a strategy. You see, God has a strategy. His words, Mark 8:36-37. What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? God has a strategy. We got to get our children in this educational system so they can understand when and how to allow wisdom, knowledge, and understanding to catch them and overtake them so they'll know exactly what to do. Remember, a man dies when he refuses to stand up for that which is right. A man dies when he refuses to stand up for justice. A man dies when he refuses to stand up for our children. A man dies when he refuses to stand up when he knows something is wrong and he don't stand up. He won't do it. And I'm going to bring in my first guest. I'm ready to bring him in. But I want to say, those of you who shop at these Chinese places, because there's no other place to go get whatever product you want, Chinese, the Japanese, and these Arabs, you're just as guilty. Because they have a design plan not to allow black people to own business, because then that's why these athletes have to come in. That's why they have to come in and start helping our school system. They need to come in and start getting that money circulating in the community. They have to do that. We shouldn't have to pay no ghetto cats the extra calls for everything. We should not have to pay ghetto cats. We need to stand up and do what we need to do. We are subject to the end. They haven't destroyed us all yet. We got a long way to go. And the last thing I'm going to say, and I don't use this word, I don't like it, but we can't be black and proud and a nigger too. You can't. You can't be black and proud and a nigger too. You can't do it. You know. So let's concentrate on our children. let's concentrate on getting them educated, because there's nothing more important than educating our children. When you don't educate your children, they don't know. Most kids right now can't read. Kids right now can't write. Most. Some of them don't learn to write until they get to prison. It's sad to say, but it's the truth. But we have to do what we have to do. We can't do nothing else, you know. People see when you see black folks can't handle the truth. You can't tell the truth around black folks. If you tell the truth around black folks, you see, they're gonna be mad at you. You lying on that white devil. You lying on that white devil. That was my man, you know, he rubbed me in the back of my head many times. I can't forget when Fred Upton rubbed the mayor of all Sambo's, Marcus Muhammad, back of his head, was patting him in the back in front of everybody. I mean, I was embarrassed behind that. But it is what it is. We must move to a whole different level and continue to fight this battle. Ghetto cats, racist money, let's beware of that. If I can help it, even if I'm about to run out of gas, I'd rather run out of gas and find and call a tow truck to come get me than go through these Arab stores. I'm not going to do it. I can't tell you what to do because you got a man of own fetish, and you tell a black person what to do, they're going to challenge you. You see, I ain't going that far. I'm busy doing, I got to go home and watch my program. Look, you're being ghetto taxed, and I'm saying this to try to help you. I know you can't help all people, especially black folks. If you're not doing something for black people, they ain't going to be bothered with you no way. You know. But I say this. Let's deal with the educational system. Let's start there. And I think everybody can do that. And on that note, I'm going to bring in my first guest from beautiful, beautiful Kalamazoo, Michigan. We're going to bring in Mr. White, and he's going to give you his take on how he feels. Let's listen to Mr. White. Talk to me, my brother.
Brother Pinckney, how you doing, sir?
Man, you know me. I'm just rocking and rolling and rolling and rocking, trying to make it happen, they say. That's all I can do. I'm down here fighting a monster. You know how I do it.
Yeah, I know you are. And I have to agree with you 100%, you know, in terms of the violence that's being perpetrated in our schools. And that's the greatest form of violence that's being perpetrated right now, is the violence that's being perpetrated in our schools. And the fact that you know, this is slavery times. You know, when as slaves, if we were not allowed to be able to read. And the bottom line is that if we tried to read, we were subject to penalty. Serious penalty, that even death, you know, for trying to read. Now here it is, like you say, 450 some odd years later, you know, and we still aren't allowed to read. You know,
no.
Let's be very clear. You know, they know how to educate these children if they choose to. They know that these children require the science of reading, yet they refuse to give it to them. So the bottom line is that we're still in slavery times as it pertains to education and being able to read. And I think I might have told you this at one other time. You know, this was the 2021, I believe, 2022 school year. And this is in the state of Michigan. This is the state's statistics. 84% of black children in the state of Michigan have literacy issues. 67% of brown children in the state of Michigan have literacy issues. 50% of white children in the state of Michigan have literacy issues. You know, the biggest problem that we have is we don't have what we should have, which is reading academies. We can establish reading academies, and it's fairly simple to do. See, because anyone who has any background in reading whatsoever can learn, you know, to be a science of reading instructor in just 1 week, in just 30 hours, 25 or 30 hours, you know, during the course of 1 week. 5 days, Monday through Friday, either 5 hours a week, depending, you know, if you go through SLD Reed Center or if you go through the Michigan Dyslexia Institute, that's 5 days, 6 hours a week. And then you have an internship, and then once you complete your internship, you become a certified reading instructor. You know, these kids are going to college. You know, they're going to college, and they spend these you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to get a college education. And in a lot of cases, what it is that they have their degree in, they will never, ever use, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of these kids who are coming out of high school, turning 18, you know, have turned 18 years old, a lot of these kids who are still in college, you know, struggling, you know, financially in college, these are the young people, especially young black people, that we want to target, because we want to say, okay, look, let's get you certified as a reading instructor in a week. Let's get you through an internship, you know, and then, like I say, get you certified, and then let's start establishing reading academies, and then let's solicit those federal dollars and pay them like their teachers, because that's in fact what they are. They are teachers of reading, you know, of the science of reading, period, you know. And, you know, they teach you to decode the English language, to write the English language, to comprehend the English language. You know, they teach you all of these things, you know, and each one teach one. We get these young people teaching these other young people who are teaching other young people, you know. But the bottom line is, like I said, is that they shouldn't have to go to college to become a reading instructor. They don't have to go to college to become a reading instructor. You know, that shouldn't be a requirement in a reading academy. And as you say, and this is just the bottom line truth, and I got to agree with you, you know, as tough as I feel about, like you, I love my people too, you know, but the bottom line is that we're at fault, okay?
Yeah.
Plain and simple. It's our fault if our children can't read, and not because, you know, we're not up there trying to solicit for them to read, you know, because in many cases we are. But the reality is that we haven't have come together and had those discussions and formulated the plan and executed that plan and made it very clear that, you know what, this is what we want from you, and this is all you have to do for us, and we can teach our own. You know, you talk about that whole self-love issue, and, you know, self-love is something that's garnered by you know, a sense of self as well as a sense of accomplishment. When these young people start seeing how much they can accomplish, when they start seeing their acumen for reading, you know, just grow and grow and grow. And I'll give you a perfect example, and real quick example, is my son, my youngest son. He struggled in reading in preschool. They wanted him to stay there for kindergarten to help him with his reading. So I went out and I bought Hooked on Phonics. I worked with him after school. My wife worked with him after school. And then he went to Paramount Academy. He was there to the fifth grade. He switched schools in the sixth grade to a public school because I didn't think he had enough after-school stuff to do when he was at the Paramount, which was a charter academy. And so when he switched schools, I go to his first parent-teacher's conference meeting. And his reading, and prior to that, well, I don't even have to get into that, his English teacher says to me, he says, you know, Mr. White, when Isaiah came over here, you know, transferred schools, we tested him. And when we tested him, he tested at 12.1. And I said, okay, hold on just a minute. Are you trying to tell me that my 11-year-old sixth grader, who I never see reading a newspaper, a comic book, a magazine, a school book, or nothing, can read, can decode, read, and comprehend the English language at a beginning freshman level in college? And he said, yes, sir. This is the power that all our children, you know, have, you know, within them. They can all learn to read at a very high level. We don't need to put a cap on the level that they're reading at. And the bottom line is that, you know, yeah, we don't have to put a cap on it. We don't want you, if you're in the sixth grade, we want you reading at the ninth, 10th, 11th, 12th grade level, okay? When you come out and go into middle school, we want you taking 2 years of high school. When you come out of middle school, we want you taking 2 years, your last 2 years, sophomore, junior, and senior year of high school, and then taking 2 years of college, if that's what you so choose, okay? But the bottom line is that building that confidence in these children based on their accomplishments and then establishing that culture within these reading academies that, okay, you know what? All beef is squash. We don't beef with one another. Why? Because, you know, we love one another. That's what we're here to do. And we're here also not love one another, but to support one another. You know, when you go out into the world, you're going to start a business. And guess, you're going to make sure that you're there to support that business. You're going to support that business over any other business that might be in your community. Because that's what we're going to do in order to be able to grow our community and be able to provide for ourselves and our families, period. You know, we're going to build our own community, and we're going to build our own economy, plain and simple. You know, and so, like I say, when I came out, I transferred schools, and I transferred in the fifth grade. And when I transferred over in the fifth grade, they tested me. And when they tested me, I tested at a 13.1. I tested at being able to read, write, and comprehend the English language as a fifth grader, you know, as a on a sophomore in college level. But I read all the time. Once I learned how to read, I read all the time. I hardly read school books. I ain't going to lie to you. You know, nothing in the school book interested me. But I read comic books, magazines, newspaper, almost anything else I get a hold of, I read, you know, plain and simple. So, you know, there is nothing more important than the education of our children. The education of our children will change the entire dynamic of our culture, our society, and the momentum and the trajectory that we don't have at this time, okay? I mean, that trajectory can completely change and go another way. All of a sudden, we got kids who are going to college early if they so choose. We got kids who are, you know, who maybe have like career and technical education in some field. Maybe they're plumbers, you know, maybe they're builders, you know, maybe they're skilled in decoding and electronics and things of that nature, you know, and they're coming out and they're going right into jobs, or they're coming out, they're going into a two-year program as an intern, and they're making money, you know, and they're teaching other people these same skills and abilities. And then before you know it, with each one teaching one, and especially with young people teaching young people what it is they themselves have learned, you know, we could turn the entire trajectory of our people around, period. You know, our neighborhoods will grow. They will flourish. You know, we will be able to, if not build homes, we will be able to refurbish homes. But the bottom line is that we should not have to depend on anyone, you know, for our needs. We can supply all our own needs, and that's what we have to do. But it starts with one simple thing. It starts with coming together and having those conversations about the education of our children and demanding that, you know, that our children are educated more so, not demanding that you educate them, because you never will. White folks will never educate our children. They're not going to do it. But guess what? We can educate our own.
That's right.
And you give us those dollars that you use it. Yeah, we can educate our own.
Absolutely. You know, it's just so much that we can do, but it's like work. You know, here's what I think about. Let me start with how we got this ghetto tax and how it affects our education, everything. Because all these athletes that go out here and we idolize them, they're the greatest thing since ice cream. And they don't, you know, they go out here, they don't give a rat's butt about the community, but the media tried to build them up. Because, first of all, you came from the ghetto. Nine out of ten of the athletes came from the ghetto. Nine out of ten. And you should want to make sure, look, it's so simple. All you have to do is go to your community, open up a supermarket. And then you can write it all. Why give the governor that money? Why give government that money? It don't make no sense. And look, 33% of anything over $10 million gonna go to the government tax wise. You gonna pay one third. Well, why pay one third when you don't have to? You see?
I agree.
Why do it? And then let me give you this example. We got this guy Wilson Chandler here. He played for the Knicks, and he got a contract for $38 million. So here's what I told him. I told him, I said, look, get a 501c3 and invest that money and then write it off. Then his idea was that I wanted some of his money. I ain't asked you for no money. You know, so why would you think that? See, people take, well, that's Reverend Pinckney. You know, he's a money for. Well, I get money for. I don't get money for myself. This whole winter, last winter, the last two winter, we worked for the water. We didn't take a damn out of there for ourselves. You know, so they say stuff, but that don't make no sense. Even if I did, you're going to give 13 million dollars back to the governor? That don't make sense. But that's how we start.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have the ability to think here. They, you know, the ability to think. Go ahead.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. You know, at this point, we can't blame them for where they're at, okay? You know, there are some, you know, I don't know. You know, I'm not going to, you know, venture to say that there are some athletes out there, especially those after their career is over, that should be more invested. I agree. You know,
yeah.
But the reality of it is that we start with this generation, okay? We start educating this generation. We start educating this generation in terms of, okay, you know, how best to be able to benefit your community. Okay, and then show them how it benefits their community and show them how it benefits them as well. Okay, and so like I said, the bottom line is that, you know, I'm not so much worried about them. I'm worried about this next group of athletes, you know, and there are a lot of athletes that never, ever made it because once they got to school, they couldn't handle the academics and they never, ever went further than that. Okay,
absolutely.
Plain and simple.
Absolutely.
Other than become a college dropout. So we have to educate them. Make sure that they're college ready if they choose to go to college, you know. And like I say, and I strongly want to emphasize that if they choose to go to college, because right now, you know, there's not a lot to be money to be made in having a college education. Okay,
that's right.
I mean, because you know, the bottom line is that we should be, you know, my youngest son and my oldest son, they're both contractors. Okay, and the bottom line is that we need more contractors. We need access to heavy equipment. You know, we need to be able to, you know, use that heavy equipment to be able to, you know, buy land. Well, I mean, use that funding to be able to buy land, to be able to build homes, affordable homes, and things of that nature. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like
hey,
I said,
a little bit about that, the heavy equipment. Talk about that a little bit, because black folks don't know that. When you see people working on a expressway, operating those, that heavy machinery, most times 99.9% is they're white, but they
they're
don't
white.
Tell black folks about that. That's one of the best money making jobs you can earn easy. You ain't got to do no heavy lifting.
When you're a contractor, and I'm not quite sure exactly what that is. Now I have to do it like ask my son again, but I believe I'm correct in saying that if you have a $100 million project, and like that's what goes on in downtown, you know, Kalamazoo and other areas of Kalamazoo, they're building like $100 million structures. And they're going up everywhere, okay? If you're a contractor and you get and you get 5% of that total, that's $5 million as a contractor to build a $100 million structure, okay? And so, you know, like the bottom line is that, like you said, that's one of the biggest money-making things that you can possibly have. You know, when you have the type of equipment that you can use those big tractors where you can excavate and you can dig cellars and you can build basins and things of that nature. When you got those that heavy equipment that can lift that iron crossbar up, you know, in order to be able to put it 100, 200, 300 feet up, you know. You got to get up there to begin with, so you have to have something to be able to put it up there with. You can't carry it, you know. It weighs tons. You can't carry it. So the bottom line is that we don't have access to those type of things, and that's where it has to start. You know, we can employ a lot of young black people. We can train a lot of young black people, you know, to be making, you know, once they are done with an apprenticeship, can be making $50,000, $60,000 a year. Folks are doing it all the time. they got white folks, you know, graduating from high school. They got white folks who are not high school graduates, and they're being pulled in by these white companies, and these guys are making $50, $60, you know, $1,000 a year. How many black people do you know that are dropouts or only have a high school education or less, probably reading at a sixth grade level or below, are making $50, $60,000 a year that are black? None. You know, unless you're like my sons, you know, who are both contractors. You know, it's not happening. It's just not happening. So, you know, there is so much money to be made, and the Marshall Plan is something that they started in here in Michigan because they want to rebuild the infrastructure. Well, they know they can't rebuild the infrastructure without having skilled labor. Okay?
Right.
So they have a curriculum now for skilled labor. Okay? But that curriculum, our kids will never ever see that curriculum. Why? Because they can't read, write, and comprehend the English language.
There you go.
They'll never be able to complete that curriculum. Okay? So in order for our children to have a chance, any chance whatsoever, in order for them to be able to have some control over their own destiny, they have to be educated. And parents nowadays are wondering why their kids are so obstinate, wondering why their kids are so oppositional, wondering why their kids are turn around and tell you, fuck you, bitch. You know, excuse my language. You know, they'll say that to their parents, you know, and they wonder why they act that way. It's because you don't protect them. You've never protected them, okay? You've never gone out and fought any battles for them. You want your kids to have respect for you? Get up off your behind and go out and fight that most crucial battle of education that needs to be fought. If that's the only battle you ever fight in your life, that's the one that must be fought.
Absolutely. Hey, you know what? I agree with you 100%. We don't see what we want to do everything in front of them. We want to smoke weed in front of the thing. We want to get them old gummies. They got, like in Benton Harbor, it's only 8,000 people, less than 8,000 people here. We got six of cannabis places here. It's just flooded with this. And these kids, they running wild, you know. But the point is, we got to show them. If we show them that, hey, we're going to take the time out and do this. And here's another thing. You should go up and you shouldn't have to go up to your to the high school or to the middle school only when your child, the teacher call you up there in order for him to get back to school. You should go up there at least once a month just to check on him.
Exactly. I agree completely.
And then here's another thing. I think a child, when a child 5 years old, you should start planning for his future and help him plan for it. He may not know what he want to do at that time, but you got to introduce him to stuff. And instead of him being introduced to weed and all this kind of stuff, introduce him to a program. Even being like, they got this water program where you can become a supervisor of a water plant. All you need is a high school education. That's all you need. You're making $60,000. You know, matter of fact, I introduced it to Ben Harvard. That was last year, and they still haven't got it off the ground. I got them $100,000. This year, I'm going to give them $200,000 more. And that money just going to sit there. I'm going to tell you that. And they're going to use that money for something else, I'm willing to bet.
They're definitely going to use it for something else. And, you know, and here's one of the things that we have to do. We have to have a multi-generational approach. And the bottom line is that not only are we going to teach your children how to read, write, and to decode, read, write, and comprehend the English language, we're going to teach you how to do it, too. And we're going to teach these young grandparents how to do it, too. And the bottom line is that, you know, we want, you know, if you're educated, if you suddenly introduced to what critical thinking is all about, if you're able to, you know, think through situations, if you're able to formulate situations and come to a conclusion and start making plans, you can find that you will not only elevate, you know, the prospects of your child's life, but you will elevate the prospect of your life and other family members as well as neighbors and things of that sort also. You know, if we're walking around and let's say 60% of our population is educated, you best believe that 60% or 40, 40 or 50% is going to make a huge difference, you know, in terms of the community, especially if they're, you know, if we foster that in them in these reading academies. We have to foster their attitude. We have to explain to them, okay, why it is we're doing this, why it is we're doing that, why it is, you know, and what's to become of what it is that we're doing in these classrooms today. You know, we got to bring them in. We got to sit them down. We got to make it very clear that there's no more beef anymore, okay? We're done with beef, all right? We're here to learn. We're here to teach you not only what it is that you need to learn, we need to make it very clear that you look at your brother over here, you look at your sister over there, that's who you got. You have, you know, your brother, your sister, your mother, your father, your uncle, your aunt, that is all you have. You have nothing else. There's nothing else out there for you, you know, because the bottom line is that I think you might have touched on this at one point in time, if not today in one of the other shows. You know, you can't be black and proud and be a nigger too. And the reality of it is that these Sambos that you're talking about, they nothing but niggers, okay? Because when push comes to shove, if they don't need you no more, they'll take you out like you never existed.
Like it ain't nothing.
And you know what?
What you just said has been proven here. We had this guy named Hightower. He thought he was all that. He was the mayor. He thought he was everything. You know, you couldn't even talk to him. He wouldn't even talk to the residents that voted for him. Man, when they got rid of his butt, you should have saw him. He was just like a wet dog, you know. I mean, he was pitiful. And but it happened so many times here, and these people just can't say, well, it ain't going to happen to me. That happened to him. You know, it's going to happen to you, too, you know, when they don't need you no more. They don't, but that's because I think it's because of lack of their education. They just don't get it.
That is so well. You said it yourself. They bought into it. They think these white folks care about them, you know, and they don't, you know. And what could possibly make you think that the person before you, they cared about that person, but you know. Now they've ousted this person. Not only have they ousted this person, but they've humiliated that person. In some cases, they've imprisoned that person. What makes you think that the same thing won't happen to you? What makes you think that you're so special or so invaluable to them when they can just go out and find another jigaboo to do what it is that you do?
Absolutely. After you are 100% correct. You know, what makes you think they're not going to do the same to you, huh? What make you think you ain't like this other person to them? They don't realize that black people, they want the approval of white folks. And I will never understand that. You know, why would you want somebody who ancestors? If you look out, I mean, they sold babies. You know, they took babies out of a mother's arm, sold the baby and the mother, or sold them to different plantation owners, and they have no humanity. They don't care about people. What makes you think they're going to care about you? And this mayor walk around here talking about he could be mayor in St. Joe. St. Joe is 98% racist and Caucasian, and he think he go around telling he could be mayor. That boy's a delusional. His level of intelligence is not that heavy. He used to walk around with books to try to deceive people, you know. But the point is, we have to do something. When the people don't do nothing, then this is what we get, what we got right now.
Yeah, well, there's no question about that. Like I said, you know, this has to be a meeting of the minds, you know, and parents have to understand, you know, that between you and myself and any other strong, advocacy people or advocacy group, you know, they have to be able to know that if they bring us, you know, into a forum, if they organize and bring us into the room, we will help them see the big picture and what the big picture means. You know, because like I said, when you have a school full of children who are in the sixth grade, who are reading and comprehending the English language at a ninth grade level, these children are moving forward in life. But we don't want them just moving forward. We want them moving forward together.
There you
go. Lockstep. You know, plain and simple. And that's
the only way. That's the only way. But look, hey, I really appreciate you, and thank you so much. Hey, I would like for my good friend Big Les. for you to be on his show so you can be, you know, spitting out this knowledge to the people. Because I tell you, I'm excited with you. I love what you be saying, you know, and you're doing it from an educational platform. And I love it. I just love what you're saying, what you're doing. But if it's okay with you, I'd like to give Big Les your number so you can go on his show and talk with him.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And then I got some other, what I want to do, I got these other people from Houston, the one who participated in the Sambo Award. They have radio shows also. So Houston, St. Louis, Milwaukee, Columbus, Ohio, and Cincinnati, Ohio. We'll start with those, but let's start with Big Les. And then I want you to get this word out here, because I'm telling you, I'm excited with the word that you have given. And look, in the month of February, listen to this. This is real. Over 200,000 people downloaded our show or heard our show. That's a lot of people, especially for Blog Talk and from the computer. And I'm excited about it. I'm excited about it because, even if people don't give feedback, they're still listening. They're still sucking in that knowledge. And to me, that's the biggest thing. And when I talk about the Sambos, I think that has opened up a lot of eyes. I think when we have the Sambo Super Bowl next February, we're gonna have about 20 people participate, and I'm good with that because it's still, whether it's five people or six, it's still the same amount of work for me. And so we gonna make it happen because we gotta you know, make sure that we get everything done. And I tell you, I'm excited about everything that's happening with us and getting the word out. But look, I'm gonna let you have the last word. And I'm definitely gonna give Big Les your number so you can go on his radio show. But Les, you take the last word and you take the last 2 minutes and to say whatever you want.
You know, I worked at Kalamazoo Psychiatric Hospital for 42 years almost, and you know, between my wife and myself, we were able to carve out a pretty good life for ourselves. You know, I mean, I got a home and, you know, I've been doing a lot of work around this house here over the last 5 years or so, and it's probably valued around $450,000. You know, I live in a neighborhood where, you know, there's the homes are like $300,000-$500,000 homes and things of that nature. Really nice neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And my thing is this, you know, predominantly in this neighborhood, there's white people. Okay. Plain and simple, you know, so. I mean, like, there's a few black people, don't get me wrong, and then a lot of them are educated and things of that nature, you know, that live over here. But they live in a white, upscale life, okay? Why is it that their children, you know, enjoy all the benefits and not our children? Why is it that we're not living in households, you know, not living in nice houses like they are? Well, the biggest reason is because, number one, they're all on the same page. They're all in lockstep. Okay, and well, that's number two. Number one is that they're educating. You know, their children may go to bad schools, don't get me wrong, but they have the money to be able to make sure that their children get the proper instruction that they need to be able to succeed. We can't afford that. So we got to go out and we got to advocate for what it is that we need to advocate. There is no reason on God's green earth that our children can't be upwardly mobile, that our children can't be, you know, walking around, you know, living their best lives. You know, the only reason that they're not living their best lives is because we haven't come together to ensure that they're able to do that. It's just as plain and simple. You know, why are their children so privileged? You know, why not our children? Why not our children? Our children need to be, our children are just as important to us as their children are to them. Our children are just as important in general as their children are in general, okay? And so the bottom line is that we have to make it happen for them. We have to ensure that the generation, you know, below us, the generation below them, and the generation below them has that opportunity. Plain and
absolutely
simple. Starting, well, we can have everything that can – we can build our own communities, okay? Plain and simple.
Yeah.
Like it was back in the early in the late 1900s and the early 1800s, the early 1900s, where they built, you know, Black Wall Street, you know, where they
absolutely,
you know, we had, you know, we had beaches, we had all of these things, you know, that we had exclusively and basically, you know, if not for the white people being jealous and, you know, and just, I mean, literally blowing it up, literally dropping bombs on our town. You know,
that's a good
number.
Listen, let's end it right there, and let's talk about that the next time you come on. Let's talk. I want you to talk about that. Because that's gonna be big. In the meantime, I want to spread your word around. I want people to really get to know you. And hey, listen, man, you are education all by yourself. And I really appreciate you, man. This has been tremendous. And look, we're gonna take this thing all across the country. Because we need this type of knowledge. We need this type of talking. And that's what we don't have. And on that note, everybody, tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Let's get that total over 200,000 people who listen to our show in the month of February. Over 200,000 people heard the Pinkney show and each one of my guests. It's a blessing. And on that note, I got to let you go. Everybody have a great day.
All right.
Talk to you all soon.
Thank you.
God bless you. God keep you. And goodbye.